Yo. Can you hear me? You listening to
W-A-W. What a week. What a week. Week one. Hey, ta-da. Welcome to Wow, What a Week. This week, we carry on hanging out with people that have inspired me on my journey as they embarked on their journeys.
This is
Wow!
What a Week.
What a Week. Celebrity Guest.
Celebrity Guest.
And we are going to jump straight into our chat with easily one of the most incredible dudes you'll ever meet in the music industry. Great DJ, awesome producer. But as a gent, what a gent, man. Please make some noise for Julian Gomez.
What's up, Ryan?
What's up, Julian?
That was a nice intro.
No, that's not even the intro. That's just a little warm-up, dog. In fact, we need to get you warmed up.
Yeah.
So we're going to play a quick game.
Okay, cool.
It's called Under Fire.
Okay.
I'm going to just throw questions at you.
And it's right on the spot.
On the spot, bro. I need to get you, we're jump-starting your brain.
Okay, cool. Let's do this.
What was the first album you bought with your own money?
First vinyl was Dennis Ferrer remix of Marim Pema by Bunga Muffin.
Dead or alive, who's the one artist you'd drop everything to collaborate with?
Michael Jackson.
Pre-gig ritual, what do you do?
I pray and meditate.
Comfort food. What do you eat when you need comfort?
Anything my woman makes.
What's your go-to dish that you know she's going to love this when you cook?
That's a hard one. I think maybe a pasta.
Soweto or Lisbon when it comes to vibes?
To vibes?
Yes.
Soweto.
I thought Lisbon would be on some welcome home, papi.
No, it's not. Right. Soweto is like, when we talk about vibes, like, Soweto special, man.
Absolutely.
South Africa special.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The one song you wish you'd produced because it's so hot.
That's a hard one.
Yeah.
I'd say A Day in December by Manu.
What is special about A Day in December?
It's simplicity.
Yeah.
It's emotion.
But Manu does that. Even just his drum programming is epic.
Yeah, it's simplicity and like just it's, there's so much going on, but there's not so much going on, you know,
yes.
Like so how it's arranged as well. The emotions, the storytelling through each melody and the sonics. I'd say like that's one of the songs that, yeah, it's probably one of the songs.
Finally, if Tandi said it's me or the music, who goes?
Yo, bro, I am. I think I am music. So I think before anyone went, it would be me because I am music. So if music's not here, then I'm probably not here. You know what I mean?
And
so it's like one of those things where it's me or the music.
Do you think she's here for the music and not because you're a nice guy?
I think it's both.
What if she's just here for VIP, dog?
Nah, I think it's both. Eh? Like when you've been with someone for like so long, you know, I think it's definitely about the soul and like, you know, the person.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Julian Gomez, welcome to Wow, What a Week.
Thank you, bro. Yeah, that was quite a cool rapid fire. I've never done one, actually. Yeah, that was
like
my
first
one. I hope I did all right.
I wanted to warm you up a bit.
Yeah, thank you, bro.
Tell us about your week. How's your week been?
My week's been amazing, actually. Yeah. Twice, can I say, like, we've seen each other twice this week, which is cool.
Twice in 1 week is a first time for us ever.
For sure, right? And it's like, I always used to see you. Well, let me start back, right? So my journey, and this is like kind of full circle for me because it's like, you basically raised me on radio, like going to school every morning on YFM. And I was like, I actually really look forward to that. You know, like waking up in the morning was part of my thing. It was like, get your cornflakes in and then you get into the car and your mom drives you to school and you listen to Fresh and like the music, but also just the conversation and like the personality.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, they were part of your family. Like you were literally raising me. And I think like that's why every time I see you and every time we link and we talk, like there's just so much love and admiration and respect is because I literally feel like you've raised me.
Yes,
so this is like a full circle moment for me.
So what was a white family doing listening to a breakfast show on a black youth radio station?
I know, right? You know, I think it comes from the music. So if we go further back, my cousin is Michael G.
Exactly.
So my cousin was releasing Flipside House, Mikaze Sukasa, and he was involved in the scene, and we were listening to, actually got into mid-tempo before house music.
Mm.
So yeah, I think that's how the doors open, and going into his DJ room where all these records were, and you could smell the vinyl.
Yes.
And I think that's what hooked me, you know, and then obviously that led me to listening to YFM, because I think he played on YFM.
He used to be a guest on my show quite a few times, actually, yeah.
So that's what led to YFM, and then obviously collecting YMAG.
Yeah.
I literally still have the YMAGs. I think like you're on one of the covers.
I think I did two or three YMAG covers. Yeah.
So I have the covers of like YMAG and Fresh House Flavor. My Fresh House Flavor 5 CD is stolen.
Jeez.
So if you have an extra
the copy. Bastards.
If you have an extra copy, please, man, hook me up. But yeah, Fresh House Flavor.
Mm.
I remember there was a gig that you were playing at Bassline.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if you still remember the gig, and I was like, I think I was too young to get in, right?
Bassline or Basement?
Bassline. I think it was either where Louis Vega was here or it was Quentin Harris.
What year was this, roughly?
Early 2000s.
Okay.
Very early 2000s.
Mm.
And I think you were playing, I can't remember if Quentin Harris was here, if Louis Vega was here, if it was Frank Roger or Mr. V.
Okay, it's probably one of, because they were regulars here at that time.
Yeah, for sure. So I think it was one of those gigs. And I remember like watching it, and I actually got mugged outside Bassline that night. I was like, oh, man. I was like, hey, welcome to Joburg, bro. Like, because I'm a Pretoria boy. So like, it's like that was my introduction to Joburg. But I was too young to get in.
Mm.
I think I made a plan through Christos.
Yeah.
Or when you know, Uncle Chris is going to hook you up. You
absolutely,
know?
Yeah.
So I got in. What she played, and I think you played this Loco Dice song, man. Was it a Gallo Negro?
Oh, yes.
And I was just like, the crowd went crazy, and I was like, yo, man, Fresh is a vibe, bro.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like all of these memories are like really special to me because it's like part of my childhood, you know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, just thought I'd also touch on those things, you know?
No, thank you. Thank you very much. So, yeah. Back to the question. Tell us about your week. How's this week been?
My week, it's been cool, cold, super cold. But good, man. Like I feel good. I feel healthy.
Mm.
We did a really cool chat. I'm not sure if I can mention it.
Oh, yes, you can. Okay. Because the chat, basically our episode will be a week after the chat.
For sure.
So the chat is going out. Yeah. But the chat will have played by then.
For sure. So yeah, my week's been incredible, man. I think I'm blessed. Got to sit down with some of my heroes and icons that I've looked up to. People that raised me on radio, Louis Vega, that's like an incredible, you know, artist, DJ, producer, and been a big part of my musical journey. So I'd say I'm having probably one of the best weeks this year so far. So thank you for asking, bro.
So you were part of the round table that we had with Louis Vega, Vinny Da Vinci, Christos, Greg Maloka, Psyche was also there.
Yeah.
What did you take away from the chat that we had?
It was a surreal one for me, right? Because it's like you're sitting on this round table with so many stories, and I almost feel like we didn't have enough time.
We didn't have enough time,
and it's like I was just like absorbing everything.
Mm.
And for me, it was, I felt like I'm on the right path.
Sure,
you know what I mean. Like this is actually like a full circle for me, a first full circle moment.
Mm.
But beyond that, I feel like sometimes no matter how stable one can look,
yeah,
there's always like these underlining emotions and thoughts coming into your spirit, right? So it's like sitting on that round table just made me feel like that kid that used to walk to the record store and like sacrifice everything to get that record, or like all the sacrifices I made. It just made me feel like, okay, cool. So this just means I'm on the right path. You know what I mean?
Sometimes in the arts, the sacrifice is also relationships.
Yeah.
And for a lot of kids, that sacrifice becomes relationships with mom or dad.
Yeah.
Because why would you want to be a DJ when there are a ton of DJs out there not getting gigs in the first place?
For sure.
Let's talk about some of the sacrifices you made and how mom and dad played a role on this journey.
Yo, man, my parents sacrificed everything for us, you know, especially like I look at them and I always like think back. I'm like, okay, my dad left Madeira, came to South Africa. Madeira obviously is a small Portuguese island.
Yes.
Off the coast of Morocco and Portugal. Mm. And no, I don't know Cristiano Ronaldo, because most Madeiran guys in South Africa say, no, you know, like Cristiano Ronaldo, like I know him, eh? So like, but yeah, on a real note, like, yes, I think my parents sacrificed a lot.
Mm.
So it was hard for them to see, because my dad came from like a poor background.
Sure. You know?
So it was hard for him to see, okay, no, now my kid's going into this music thing.
Mm.
I don't really understand it. I want him to be a doctor.
Sure.
You know, and it was like a challenge, you know. I always felt like I was working against the grain in that space, because I could tell, like, they were like, like, okay, are you really going to do this? Can you really make it?
But your cousin Michael G was in the industry at the time, though.
For sure. But I think as a parent, you're always going to like have that fear for your child. Like, yeah. Like, are they going to make it? Are they going to be able to sustain? And there was a point where I was working like in a supermarket and I was like really depressed, man.
Yeah,
like, because I fall into the cliche,
the family,
like,
business,
the family business,
fish and chips,
corner cafe vibes, you know,
and Madeira cakes,
exactly, fish station out there, and all of those things. But yeah, I felt like I fall into the family business, but it was like a weird one for me, because I was just like, you know, I understood why my parents were like worried.
Yeah.
But I also knew that if, for me, I made a decision. I just woke up one morning. I was like, you know what? I'm either going to die or I'm going to make music and I'm going to do this.
Mm.
And it's like a very surreal moment that happens to you, because it's like you just risk everything. You don't know how your parents are going to take it.
Was there a point where you knew that, okay, I'm done here at the shop?
Yeah.
And this is the path I'm going.
I'll tell you that day I knew exactly.
Tell us.
Because I was like, so I was working, right? Mm. And like, we obviously were selling fish and chips, like, yes, you just mentioned.
I'm sorry for stereotyping.
Okay, cool. That's why. It's all good, bro. But so basically what happened is, like, I wasn't feeling it, and I was just like trying my best to like help customers, because, you know, like, you have to like fall in line with the business.
Yes.
And this guy was like so rude to me, man. Mm. And he's like, he said, like, yeah, you're incompetent. And I'm already dealing with all this mental strain of wanting to do the thing I love.
Yes.
But having to work a job till like from 5 or 6 in the morning till like 6 at night, and then, yeah, go do DJ gigs and then come back tired and broken and falling asleep during my lunch hour and stuff. So it's like, so then the guy like was just like, you're incompetent. That just got me, and I was just like angry, bro. And then, yeah, I think I said something to him that I can't really say on the podcast.
No, you can, go ahead.
But yeah, I just like kind of used vulgar, and I swore at him, and I was just like, he then picked up a fish and threw it at me.
You're lying. You hit the fish.
You threw a fish at me. And then what happened is, like, the whole shop, like almost wanted to, like, beat this guy up. So, yeah, then I knew. I was like, bro, like, your spirit's not in a good space here.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's not a good situation, because that's not you.
Mm.
You're not the type of person that retaliates to anyone that, like, picks on you or, sure, something. Because for me, my one of my strongest assets is my mind.
Sure.
So I don't really indulge in people, like, attacking me or saying things.
You choose peace.
I always choose peace. Yeah. I try.
But the day a fish was thrown at you, you were like, okay, fuck it.
I was like, screw that shit. I'm out, bro. So I was just like, nah, man, I'm out. Like, I'm not doing this. So yeah, I mean, it's those situations and those memories you have where you're like, actually, yeah, no, I'm out, eh?
Yeah. I have a word from your mom and dad. Please put on your headphones.
Really?
Yeah.
No ways, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do this.
Put on your headphones, dog.
Cool.
Hi, Julian. Mom and dad are super proud of you in all you have achieved in the music industry, not only locally, but also abroad. I will forever remember the night you walked into my room at the age of 19 and told me with a shocked expression on your face that you were suspecting that someone was playing a prank on you, as you had just received a text message informing you that you had been selected to represent South Africa at the Red Bull Music Academy Awards in London. I guess the rest is history. Over the many years, your passion and love for house music has just grown, always having a positive impact in people's lives. Not only are you a successful music producer, but such a humble, kind and honest person. Keep your faith and always stay connected to all that which brings you inner peace.
That's for mom and dad, bro.
That's dope, man. That's so cool. Yeah, Like, that's my mom. I know she scripted that, like, and she really thought about it. So it's nice to hear. A lot of people actually know my mom from my first album.
Yeah.
Because she's actually in the background on the ending. So.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, man. My mom's I'm probably one of the closest human beings to me. Mm. One of the closest human beings to me. So, yeah, I'd do anything for her. She'd do anything for me. And I'm just, like, happy that she's happy that I'm doing my thing, you know.
It was Mother's Day the other day. What did you do? Did you guys hang out?
We hanged out, you know. It's been a strange period because we obviously, like, I lost my grandmother, who's obviously, like, also a very big part of all of our lives and our family's lives. So, like, that was, like, the first Mother's Day without the rock of our family.
Jeez, bro.
So, like, it's, you know, thank you. But, yeah, I think, like, we're doing good, man. You know, like, we're very blessed, you know, to live life and to see, you know, my grandmother had a long life.
But. Sure. If you and the missus decide one day, let's start a family.
Yeah.
What's the one quality you hope she will bring to your kids?
Firstly, I think she'd make an incredible mom before anything. But I think just pure love.
Yeah.
Just unconditional, pure love.
Mm.
And I think that's, like, missing in a lot of families. There's always, like, conditions. And you think that's crazy because you, like, with kind of you guys of your family, right?
Yeah.
But it's, like, there's always the conditions. Sure. It's, like, how do you make me feel?
Mm.
And if you don't make me the way I'm supposed to feel in this frame of mind that I've designed, then surely this is not love.
It's always conditional, almost.
It's always conditional. Yeah. I mean, I think most relationships, most... family and anything, it's always conditional. Yeah. You know, it's always like, you're supposed to make me feel a certain way, and if you don't, then surely this is not love.
Yes, sir.
You know, so yeah.
You and Tandi have been together for what, 10, 11 years?
Higher up.
Was it longer than that? Did you guys meet at creche? What is this?
12.
12 years.
Yeah, I could be wrong, but which is in a... She's going to beat me for. But no, I think it's 12 years. Yeah, it's 12 years, if I'm not mistaken.
How did you guys meet and what was it about her?
She was a DJ, still is a DJ, but she's retired. But she comes back in stages.
Mm. Let me show you how to mix, man.
Let me show you how to mix. Come here, right? You think you know what you're doing. We met through music. So I was even telling her the other day, I was like, yo, man, music brought us together. Like, it's really something special. But yeah, like, I was also like, I was quite smooth back in the day. Like, I was like...
What did you say to her?
It's like, let me send you some music. Let me send you some promos.
My dude.
So I was like... I got a remix coming out with the layabouts.
Yeah.
Let me send it to you. He's like, I love the layabouts. I was like, yeah, okay, cool. Wait until you're the remix. Yeah. You know, so.
What is your next line? One day, me and you are going to be laying about.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, I mean, we met through music. She was a DJ.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know as well. I think, like, been in the industry for a very long time.
Yeah.
In the background.
And she's good people.
Oh, bro, like, she's amazing people.
Yeah.
You know, she's amazing people. So it's, you know, I think most people in the industry know her, love working with her.
Mm.
And, yeah, like, I think...
Is she allowed to be brutally honest in your relationship about the work that you do? Because obviously you're the more active one in the relationship.
In terms of what...
Like, that was a shit mix, baby. Can you please improve that transition? Like, what was that?
You know what? I'm probably harder on myself than most people that are hard on me. But yeah, I think she has that level of honesty with me that she can basically just say, I don't know. Eh? But she's like probably one of my biggest support systems. Sure. So
she's probably at every gig you do.
Yeah, man. I think people that know us, like every time we go, it's like, yeah, where's Julian or where's Tandi? Like, because we're always together. It's just you do everything together.
What happens on days that actually I just want to go to this gig alone, and you genuinely just want to be alone? It's not her, it's you. Do you guys ever have those moments?
I never like really have those moments. Eh? Like for me, I'm like always like, if you want to roll through, like let's go through and check it out. But yeah, there are times where obviously like I'm traveling or I'm doing gigs quite far away, and then it's just logistically like it's one of those things. But most of the time, yeah, she's always there. I always asked her, I was like, could you ever get tired of listening to me DJ? And her answer is, I think it's no. So that's a good thing, you know, so because I'm always trying to do something different.
Yes, sir.
Trying to do something cool. So, yeah, I mean, we're always just rolling up together.
How do you guys deal with conflict? who's the peacemaker? Because relationships will often have the one that is willing to say, okay, my pride aside, let's fix this.
I think it's subjective to the situation, right? Mm. So it's basically, I wouldn't say that either of us are like peacemakers. I think it's just the frame of mind or the things you're going through in that period of life or time. So I think it's more like an understanding. I think when you genuinely in a relationship and you like proper soulmates, I think there's a level of, yes, you can't stand each other sometimes, or like, yes, like, you know, but there's just this essence. I call it the soul of the relationship.
Yes.
And if that soul is always in that space, then you know that no matter what, like, that person is always going to come through.
Yes, sir.
Whether like it takes a day or whatever it takes, the peace will be made.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think it's definitely one of those things where it's subjective, you know.
Ever had a fight overseas but just stuck together in the same hotel room? So, like, fuck, we're here.
Trying to think. Really, yeah. I think really. Like, yeah. I think it's rare that we have arguments overseas, because I think we're just glad to be, like, somewhere new and somewhere.
Exactly.
Like, you know, I mean, I know a lot of couples fight when they're traveling. Mm. But I think that's just fatigue and anxiety.
Mm.
And stress from all the bills of like, oh, 24 pounds. What, 24? What? It's, what's the pound at? 24 now?
It's probably at 24 rands for the pound.
So it's like, oh, my word, bro. We have to buy this fish and chips for like 500 rand.
Mm.
You know, like, that's so frustrating.
So even overseas, you want fish and chips?
In London, I think every city has its cuisine, you know. Yes. I think Ibiza, obviously Spanish.
You know what I love about London? Going to a kebab shop at 4 a.m.
Right.
And having a nice greasy kebab.
Yeah, we did that. I did that once with Ed Jazz.
Yeah.
We finished playing. I don't know if it was Fabric.
Yeah.
Or where we were. We played some gig in London. It was like 4:30 a.m. And I'm standing on this cold corner, like shivering, like, because I get cold quite easy, but like, I'm just like shivering, eating this kebab. Like,
yeah.
And I'm just, Martin's looking at me like, you're just like, come on, bro, you're an amateur. But yeah, I remember those nights, like in London, just having a kebab on the corner of the gig. Yeah.
Absolutely. We have a message for you.
Okay. Another message.
I have so many memories with Julian, now spanning over 12 years now. And watching him step into his purpose has truly been one of life's greatest blessings for me. But beyond the music and beyond all the milestones, I want to speak about who Julian is at his core. He's one of the most selfless people I know. I think he knows this. I always tell him. He gives so generously with his heart, with his time, his energy, without ever expecting anything in return. He brings so much joy, so much light and warmth into my life and into the lives of so many others around him. Through his music, he doesn't just entertain, you know, he connects, he heals, he moves people in ways that not even words alone can explain. Watching him chase his dreams, stay committed and pushing through even when things weren't easy has been nothing short of inspiring to me. I've seen the late nights, I've seen the sacrifices and all the doubts. But I've also seen every breakthrough, every small victory, and every well-earned success. Julian, you've earned every bit of recognition that comes your way. And I want you to know I've got your back always. I'm so, so, so proud of you. Not just for what you've accomplished, but for the incredible human being you continue to be through it all. And I can't wait to see where your next adventure takes you and us. And the best is still to come. Love you. Bye.
That's dope. Yo, man, that's a very special message. Thank you, man.
You know, she said, I've never had to be sneaky in the house. Recording this voice note had me feeling so sneaky.
It sounds like she was in the car, bro. It's like, what are you doing?
Like, why are you sitting in the car, baby?
What are you doing to our relationship here, bro? Go on, Fresh.
I apologize that we had your lady sneaking around.
Now I'm thinking, is she talking to her, bro?
Yeah. She didn't. Like, I can see she's on her phone. Now, is she in the car?
Now I got trust issues driving home. So, yeah, no, it's cool, bro. But yeah, that was a very special message. Thank you, man. But yeah, very special.
And anything you'd like to say to her, maybe into camera, so that the world knows?
Oh man, she knows, man. Like, I'll basically say, I love you mucho, and she knows what that means. And obviously, like, she's like, when I say bam and she says bam, we know what that's our, like, our language, you know. So okay, we know exactly what we're talking about. But yeah.
But now we're all curious. What is bam?
So bam is just like it's like a what is it, like a nickname almost, okay, that you just give to people. I suppose like some people have, like, people have different names for each other.
Ah, so like a pet name basically.
Like basically like a pet name, but I think it comes from bambino. Which means like
you're bambino. Yeah, now you're bam.
Yeah, now you're bam. It's just short. So when people see bam, they're like, why do you say bam? Like, yeah, what is that? So, because yeah, obviously you'd say Tandy or Julian.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So yeah, but yeah, thanks for that. That's a special message, man.
So she's been a part of your journey, like you're saying, for the past like 11, 12 years.
For
but,
sure.
But your first gig was 2003.
Yes.
Where was that? Do you remember the first vinyl you played that day?
Was in Centurion at Splash. Yeah. Do you remember a place called
Splash? I did a Kings of Compilations party on a Sunday at Splash.
What?
I think it was me, Glenn Lewis, Oskido, Ganyani. I can't remember who else, but Splash was incredible.
So yes, I played at Splash and I had like, I think I had like 80 records.
Yes.
And my brother's like, okay, cool, bro. Because my brother's also like in the scene and he was doing events and he was also a DJ.
Yeah.
So he was like, cool, I'm going to give you an opportunity to play Splash. And he did a gig there and it was like, we were known as the people, like, my brother used to just do events. And
yes,
the first event we did actually at our parents' house. So we opened the garage and
yo,
we got like the speakers out and like, yo.
You were those kids.
We were those kids, like throwing parties at our houses and stuff. So yeah, like that, I'd say the first gig was actually the house, but I'm talking about like professional
yes,
gig.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I'd say Centurion Special was definitely that one. And I think, I remember playing Winter Song. Mm. I think it was on Africanism.
Oh, yes.
I remember playing Trouble Kids.
Mm. Which one?
Was it Running Man?
Ah, yes, yes.
Was
yes,
it Running Man?
Yes.
Just like, I don't know how I remember that, but yeah, playing Running Man, I could be wrong.
Yeah.
Played Winter Song. I played Marim Pema, obviously, by Dennis Herrera. And I'm just like envisioning it now. I'm seeing it. And I'm like, yeah, I think those are the three records that I remember playing. Yeah. Stomp Your Feet.
Yeah.
But it was a thing because I was also like, my brother wanted to play Stomp Your Feet. So then I was like, no, bro, come on, let me play Stomp Your Feet. So I think I took like the vocal or something and then I laced it with like the drums. Because remember on records, they used to have like the drums yes, and then the a cappella and stuff.
Sure.
So I remember like, yeah, doing like a remix and then like, yeah, my brother looked at me and was like,
You might have something
here. You might have something here, you know. So yeah, I mean, that was the very first gig I remember playing.
Your mom speaks about how when you were 19, you got a text that said you're part of the Red Bull Academy in London.
Yeah.
And how proud they were of you. Tell us about your journey up to that point, because I'm certain that point became the turning point.
Wow. Like, you've just decoded it. Like, exactly, bro.
Yeah.
Before that, it was hard.
Yeah.
Like, it was playing gigs, not getting paid.
Sure.
It was playing gigs and people not responding. It was working so hard to be on the ball with people like yourself and Glenn and Michael G and Fresh. And like, to be on the lineup with you guys was like, it meant you had made it.
Mm.
So as soon as you saw like Monde and Silly Bean, and those are the guys like,
yes,
kind of going on to, and God rest them on their soul. But like, those were the guys that were like on making it. Like, they yes, were the ones. And Coffee was with Shana.
Mm.
And then Coffee was also like, you know, like
making inroads very exactly, fast. Yeah.
And I remember it was Shimza and myself. Like, Shimmy and myself were like the two youngest DJs in the country.
Yeah.
There was another DJ by the name of DJ Buxtina.
I remember Buxtina, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I remember like Shimmy and myself, we're the youngest DJs. We were like, and I think like maybe Chris and Vinny, and I don't know if you, even yourself, if you saw like these two like kids just always walking around the SAMC, like,
yeah,
you know, like trying to like make it. So
SAMC is a conference that we used to do, Michelle, sure, Vinny, Christos, Oskido, and Greg Maruka.
Yeah. And it was very, very special. But yeah, to answer your question, bro. So yeah, I think before that, was really hard, really difficult, a lot of challenges.
Who do you think saw what in you that they said, we need to have this kid at the Red Bull Academy in London?
Well, the Red Bull Music Academy is something really special, right? Mm. Because it's like a 60-page, really deep, what do you want to say, like questionnaire?
Mm.
And you fill it out and they ask you random questions like, do you prefer jerk chicken or pizza?
Yeah.
And it's like almost they've designed it with psychologists to kind of figure out if this is the right person they're going to bring to the Red Bull Music Academy.
Yes.
So I don't know exactly who saw anything, but I knew that it was a big deal because the people before me were like Coffee, and he was in Cape Town with Brayuma Sekela.
Mm.
Then you had people like, on my academy, we had like, I think Moody Man and Erica Badu was there and Flying Lotus. And so like, it was a big deal, you know, Lee Vega, Masters at Work,
yeah.
Frankie Knuckles.
So you were at the big one.
Yeah, I was at the big one, but I think Frankie Knuckles also did a Red Bull. So when I saw all of the past academies,
yeah,
I was like, wow, this is actually like a big deal, man. Like, I think I might have cracked a door, like a little bit of like a thing in the door, yeah. You know?
What's the one thing you picked up at the Red Bull Academy when you were 19 that you still carry with you right now?
I'd say fearlessness, like just being unapologetic an artist.
Yeah.
Because I think I do suffer from an imposter syndrome because I almost feel like I had to have a different journey to get where I am now. Like I had to go through something. Like I was always like, I always felt like, no, an artist's life has to be like this way. So I think I'd say like, yeah, fearlessness and just trying to deal with, you know, not being sure if I'm going to make it.
Yes.
And I think most youngsters and most artists these days, ultimately, you're not sure if you're going to make it, bro.
Mm.
You're really not sure if you're going to make it. And when you make it, then how long can you last?
Exactly.
How long? I mean, because we don't celebrate longevity.
It's one thing to get into a room, but can you stay in that room?
Yeah. And I mean, look at yourself. Look at Vinny. Look at Chris. Look at anyone that's been doing it for a long time. Myself, I think it's 20-something years now. 21 years I've been DJing. 22 years. So I think like, yeah, longevity and just dealing with all of those things, you know. So yeah, I mean, Red Bull definitely changed a big part of my life. Kind of cracked something, but it's not like I thought, oh, now I actually made it. Actually, funny enough, I still don't believe like I've become my best DJ or music producer.
No, you're not done, bro.
And exactly, I just don't feel like I'm there yet. I feel like just even like recently I was going back on the Kunye stream.
Yeah.
So I played Kunye, I think it was a few weeks ago, and incredible event, bro.
Yeah.
Congrats to the team behind
that's massive, yeah.
And I was watching it back. I was like, I still don't feel like I had my best like performance. And I was trying to like analyze. I was like, but why? And I was like, cool, bro. Like, you know, like you're going through a lot. Like, you know, your grandmother's on a deathbed. You have to show face. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't see. Like at the end of the day, we're still human beings.
Yeah.
So I might be behind the decks and I might be playing, but behind my life, behind those decks, there's things happening and there's things that are going on in my life that I'm dealing with, you know. So like whether it be grief or losing someone that raised you and things like that. So I think like I could get better at not being over emotional about like when you do something, like just go do it, but not being highly over emotional about it. Because I think creatives, we highly emotional about everything.
Going through that period where Gran is on her deathbed,
yeah,
but you must still gig. Is there a song that would always maybe just pep you up a bit?
For me, it's every song, bro.
Yeah.
Because it's like as a kid, it's like you DJing in the room and your grand, you know, like you got your deck set up and obviously like your grand walks in and she's like trying to analyze. I think my grand still thought I was a singer for a whole I still think that because she's like, oh, you're going to a gig. Oh. And then she's like, cantor means singing.
Oh, yes.
So like, so I was like, I think she thought I was a singer. But, and yeah, I'm definitely not a singer. But, yeah, it's just everything because you remember, like, for example, when you come home and you have a bag of records with you because you bought at a record store and she'd go through it trying to figure out what it is. You know, and things like that. And obviously she would see it and then understand it. But I think it's everything. I think it's not as specific to a song, but it's specific to the journey that you've been through, you know, DJing, making music. And even when I was making music in my bedroom, she'd open the door and I'd be on like a really bad PC. She'd just be, she'd just be like trying to understand.
Looking like a mad scientist.
Exactly. Yeah. I think she was just trying to understand it. Because, you know, I mean, my grand, what it was at, she was 102.
Jeez.
So like, yeah, bro, like I just think about the life she had, like, and how much things she saw. I mean, I think she was like, what? It's like a girl in World War II.
Yeah.
Like in it. So like she was just probably looking at all of these things. Like, what is this thing and what's that? So I think it's everything. I think it's the whole journey of everything that would trigger me, you know, during that set. So yeah. It's but then again, music's also a salvation, you know, like it heals.
Your mom earlier on said you must keep the faith.
For sure.
How much of a role does prayer play in your life?
So religion is very specific to, I think I grew up hardcore Catholic, you know, so.
Both me and you.
Is it?
Still have my rosary.
Is it?
Yeah.
Let me see, bro. I better I put it on today. I better.
Don't leave home without it, bro.
You know what I mean? Yeah. So I think I grew up hardcore Catholic. But then there was a lot of like, there's like this internal battle that you have spiritually to try and figure it out.
Yes.
You know, because like you start, and you know this as well. I'm presuming like you go into these scenes and you go into like the real world, the underground, like where, you know, our scene, sometimes someone's evil and you're trying to figure it out and you're experiencing things and trying things and you're doing things and you're like questioning your upbringing and what you've done. And so I think it's like that's part of a story that you can never explain on an interview.
Yes, sir.
Because it's so deeply ingrained into your spirit, into your psyche, that you can never explain it. But
are you a daily prayer? Do you pray on occasion?
For sure. I think
you pray to give thanks.
I pray because I feel like it connects me to a realm that I am still trying to figure out.
Ah, yes.
So I think some people like go do therapy and some people do whatever they have to do. But for me, I think prayer just connects me to a realm that it's like the second voice in your head. Because I know, like, you know, when you close your eyes and you talk inside your head, like sometimes you hear your voice, but sometimes you hear a different voice.
Sure.
So it's like, that's what prayer is to me, you know.
Now, when you say the name Julian Gomez or Julian Gomes.
Gomez, yeah.
Gomez Zulu. Gomes.
Is that Zulu, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Those that don't know you, the minute we say Love Song 28, they say, let's talk about that song and how that changed your life.
Yo, where do I start, man? That song is like, I think people truly don't understand how deep that song is.
Tell us more.
Because it's like, there's things that happen to me and in my life that are incomprehensible.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot explain why things happen. So like, for example, the number 28. It's kind of scary, to be honest with you, bro, because it's just always appearing to me.
Okay.
I feel like, and like people might think I'm crazy, but I suppose most people think artists are crazy. But I feel like it's another world trying to get into this space, because I feel that it just appears everywhere.
Okay, so 28 haunts you, basically.
It basically haunts you. It's like, for example, even now since my grandpa passed, like I see it everywhere when I pick up my phone. When I'm driving in the car, when I'm like on the TV, like it's everywhere. So it's, I don't know what it is. Like, I don't know what Love Song 28 is, but it seems like it's just something that was meant to change my life or meant to connect me with this world. I don't know what the end result is or what it is, but it kind of like scares me, because even on the 28th day of the month, I get a bit like, okay, what's 28th?
What's going to happen today?
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's just the strangest thing that I could never explain.
Do you think it's a real or a bias, because I bought a white Corolla and now all I see is white Corollas? That maybe that's what it is. And
I think about that a lot. I think, yeah, bro, you've self-programmed this thing into your head. Like you've kind of, like you just said, the Corolla thing, right? So I think about it, but then you tie music into it.
Yeah.
And then you tie people into it.
Sure.
And then you tie your journey into it. And people come up to you and say, that song changed my life. Mm. I got married to that song.
Yeah.
I was going through something. I almost committed suicide. Your music saved me.
Sure.
Like I've had a few people come to me and say like, yeah, like I almost killed myself.
Mm.
Like I wanted to commit suicide, but your music saved me.
Mm.
And in moments like that, like I'm really like, wow. I'm like, this thing is not meant to be like, I want to be a superstar sure. DJ, which I don't mind. If it happens, cool, man. Like that's a cool story. But then I started realizing this thing that I'm doing is much deeper than what the industry is.
Absolutely.
It's not, it's much bigger than the algorithms. It's much bigger than superstardom, the jets, the nice clothes, the cars, the women.
Sure.
And I started realizing these things and I started realizing like, cool, like, and I think that's where my spirituality brings me back, you know?
But when you realize that your music to others is healing or hope,
yeah,
does it put you under pressure that that's what people hold you to now? Or does it just warm your heart to know that, listen, I'm doing stuff that is impacting people's lives?
It's a tough one, eh? Because you make music and some people love it and some people hate it.
Also that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, and some people, like you're also in the industry where you have to be current. You have to, it's just like if your next song is not the hottest song, then you fall off. You know, so I've kind of dealt with it by realizing that I'm a storyteller.
Yeah.
And I'm here to tell stories.
Sure.
Through music and through art and through creativity and through events. I mean, I've started doing events now. And I know what my purpose is. But it's not to say that I'm naive to like, this is an industry.
Sure.
No, you know, like you need brand, you need strategy.
There's still the business of music.
There's still business, and we know that. That's, I suppose this is why we are where we are, is because we weren't overly emotional about this thing of being a creative. Like we knew, like, cool, there's money involved here.
I still find it wild that I started DJing when I was, what, 13?
Yeah.
I'm turning 53 in October.
Wow.
This is all I've done. I've raised my kids doing this. Bought property doing this, put my kids through school doing this.
That's incredible.
And that's why it's something you can't take lightly or for granted. And it sometimes saddens me when I see guys pissing away the goodwill they build with their names and their reputations. And all of a sudden you want to show up drunk at a gig or not show up at all. But it's an industry that if you do it right, you'll put your kids through school.
Can change
your
life.
And build wealth even.
Exactly. I mean, and you know what the thing is, bro? Like, I think you really have to commend yourself, you know, and you really have to think about it. Because I don't know, like, when you started DJing, did you ever think that you could raise a family or have a legacy the way you have, you know?
Like, dude, all I wanted to do was just play tunes. That's it. And be a lawyer. I was actually meant to be a lawyer. I'd be so miserable right now. Yo.
It could help with the music industry, with all the stuff, if you had, you know, music law in there.
You know what? My L101, I think, taught me just enough to get by with our contracts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'd say, like, yeah, man, I think... it's just, I think a lot of people need to understand that the industry is not easy.
Yeah.
And you know this. And like going through the evolution of it is even harder now with streams and,
sure,
you know, trying to like build a life. So I think anyone that can build a life from this, beyond if you think you're not the biggest, like it's not about being the biggest or like the best. It's like this thing's not a sport.
Yeah.
You know, it's creativity. And it's like, it's really special that people can build lives on this, you know.
It's a conversation I had with Oskido about 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about why is it, do you think, and this was 8 years ago.
Yeah.
That despite all the changes, all the new talent, we are still gigging, for instance. And we always boil it down to, we've never tried to be number one. We've never chased number one.
Yeah.
We are, this is what I do. If you fucked with what I do, you'll book me. If your crowd love me, you'll bring me back. And that's been the focus. The focus has never been, I want to be the best. I want to be number one. I want to be the biggest.
For sure. And that's why, like, honestly, bro, like, I have so much love and respect for, like, the OGs, especially, like, you know, in South Africa, because you guys just are cut from a cloth that is just not existent anymore.
Mm.
It's just like
we burnt the formula.
You burnt the formula because I feel like you're absolutely right. It's like most guys coming up now want to be the best so bad that they forget they have to be themselves. You know, they have to have vision. They have to like represent themselves. But I think attest to like Vinny, Chris, yourself, Glenn, Ganyane, like all of the guys, right? Mm. I think it comes from loving music.
Mm.
And you can sincerely see it.
Mm.
Like when Chris is rocking there and when you guys are rocking, like you can really see that you guys really just love music.
Mm.
But you're not influenced.
Mm.
And I think that's the thing, right? Because a lot of kids are being influenced by, oh, I see the drones flying over this crazy crowd. And if I don't get that in the next 3 years, I'm hanging up my headphones.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? But it's like, bro, this is a journey.
Yeah.
Like, look at me. I'm 22 years in.
Mm.
And I don't even think I'm at the beginning. Like, it's like, I'm still trying my best to get there, you know?
Your mom spoke about your humility.
Yeah.
Tandi spoke about your humility. But I always say being humble when you are flying is actually more difficult thing to do. It's easy to be full of shit. It's easy to sip your own Kool-Aid and think you're the superstar all of a sudden. You know, Louis Vega has me on speed dial.
Yeah.
At Jazz has me on speed dial.
Yeah.
What stops you from sipping that Kool-Aid? Because that Kool-Aid is always here.
It's not me, Fresh, bro. Honestly, bro. It's like, I feel like it's just not me. I can't really explain it. It's like I'm never going to believe my own hype. I'm going to have confidence.
Yeah.
Because now I know that I've put a lot of work in and I'm really confident in what I can do.
Sure.
But I think it's also just the way I was raised. I don't think I'm better than anyone. I don't think anyone's better than me.
Mm.
I don't care if you're the highest paid sports star or politician or the richest man on planet Earth.
Mm.
Like, I honestly believe that no one's more like better than me, and I'm not better than them. And it's that simple.
Mm.
And I think if you follow that philosophy in life, you would see that you would have more life experiences that are pure.
And you'd better manage expectations and reality. I think because a lot of people are in this cloud of what ought to be because of where they are.
For sure.
Versus I'm on my own journey right now. Some doors will not open that open for someone else, but it doesn't mean my journey is invalid all of a sudden.
Yeah.
That walk your journey, run your journey. If you have to crawl, because that's all the energy you have at that moment, you crawl then.
Yeah, exactly.
But you don't stop.
But I mean, look how many people are like just chasing.
Mm.
They're just chasing and they keep chasing. And it's like it removes so much of the journey that like, before you know it, you blink your eyes and it's done.
Absolutely.
And it's like, you didn't play that gig in that area or like you didn't have that life experience because what? Because you felt like you were too cool for it.
Absolutely.
Look, it does come down to business and it does come down to strategy. And there's some gigs you just have grown out.
Yes.
And I'm sure you've lived through this, right? But I think humility is understanding your purpose and understanding what you're doing here, playing music for people. Bro, like how cool it is to wake up in the morning and make and play music for human beings. You know, it's not that deep. Like, you know, and it's just like, I think obviously social media and everything now has changed the game. You know, like everyone is just chasing, you know, which is fine, but let people chase, you know, that's cool.
Mm.
You know,
how did you and At Jazz hook up?
He ran a remix competition with Robert Owens and we remixed SG Family.
Yeah.
We remixed the song and like I put it out, I sent it to him on SoundCloud and he was like, it's on. Like, in, I think it was like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
He's just like, cool, it's on the comp.
Oh, wow.
Do you remember they used to do like remix comps?
Yeah.
Then from there, he came down, he played House 22.
Mm.
So pulled up on him, was like, hey, I'm Julian. And that's just how we started. And he's become like a big brother to me, one of my mentors. And I have a lot of like mentors from a distance. I consider you one of my mentors. I consider Chris and Vinny and Coffee and so many, even Louis in some degree, like even though like I've only recently engaged with him now, like musically I've always been studying you guys.
Mm.
I've been studying everyone, even yourself, everyone I've been studying.
Mm.
So yeah, At Jazz, definitely very big part of my story. He's like a big brother to me. Yeah.
Isn't it wild how a lot of the house music household names, especially from overseas,
yeah,
have a level of humility many would not be able to understand.
True.
That you're a Grammy nominated, you're a Grammy winner.
I know.
You are Louis Vega, bro.
That's crazy, man.
How are you this humble?
I know, right? I mean, I was thinking that the other day. I was like, but beyond that, even just like your mind and your music.
Yes.
Like you listen to the music, like, how did you stay this humble? This music is so good.
Yes.
You know, you think about like Miles Davis, you think about jazz musicians that have that swag to them.
Yes.
And like,
yes.
And then like you get DJs that like have become the new superstars.
Yeah.
And like a lot of them are very humble.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and it's something specifically to South Africa, right? Like a lot of DJs are quite humble, especially yeah. in house music.
Mm.
You know what I think it is as well? I was thinking about it the other day. I think we were raised right.
That I think helps.
I think if it wasn't for like...
Foundation is everything.
But like DJ foundation.
Yeah.
So like me seeing how Chris moved or like Vinny, especially
mm.
Vinny.
Mm.
Vinny is one of the most humble... Like he speaks with his hands like DJ kind of vibes. Like he's not here to like prove a point.
Sure.
And I learned so much from Vinny's another mentor of mine. Like I just learned how to like move.
Yes.
Like how to like treat music, how to DJ.
Mm.
So we were raised right. You guys raised us right.
Mm.
Our generation.
Sure.
Moving forward, my concern is that the younger guys just want it so bad that they're forgetting that they need to like honor and respect the music first and their journey.
And it's still a business.
And it's still a business, yeah. So I just hope that we can keep the youth like in check and just make them realize like, yo, like, you know, these guys raised us. We're going to pass it down to you guys at some point.
Mm.
Just let us roll with it a bit. But we're going to pass it down to you at some point.
Yeah.
And then you guys need to know. Like, but it's tough, bro, because, you know, we're all individuals and we all want different things.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
We have another message for you, bro.
I'm guessing this one's from...
What's up? This is Martin at Jazz. What can we say about the man that is Julian Gomez? Well, I first contacted Julian in 2010 when him and Mike, aka G Family, remixed one of my songs. I then met Julian in House 22 in 2011, which was on my first trip to South Africa, and we got on like a house on fire, and our musical relationship started then and has grown and got stronger and stronger over the years. Even though I've only known Julian for around 15 years, we still managed to knock out two stellar albums together, which are, I have to say, some of my personal favorite work that I've ever produced. And I would imagine Julian would say exactly the same thing. Real stitch in time for us, that. Also, Julian started DJing at a very early age, like most of us, with vinyl. And to see him so into it now, still the same fire in his belly, is amazing. Julian is a very kind-hearted person, and that goes through all of his businesses, whether it is Club Night, his label, or his, you know, personal DJing as an artist, is someone to really look up to in the way of putting yourself out there. A real dedicated and devoted person to the craft. Big up, JG. All the best for the future, bro.
That's dope. All these messages are so special, man. Yeah. I need to get the recordings.
We'll think about it.
Yeah.
we're going to turn them into a song and sell them to you.
We're going to license. I'll license it for you, bro. Just, I'll license it. Just let me know the license.
We'll call the project the Messages EP.
Exactly. That's it, bro.
I'm going to send you these as long as you turn them into an EP.
I will, bro. But then we have to discuss royalties and see.
No, we can talk, bro. We can talk. When you collaborate with Anat Jazz or anyone else for that matter,
yeah.
And often you're in different parts of the world, at what stage do you say to each other, maybe let's meet in studio, or there's no need for such?
Well, when we started collaborating, internet was there and things were like kind of forming, but it wasn't as it is now.
Yeah.
I think nowadays you can collaborate much more easier like via the internet.
Sure.
But I was playing Sonarfest in Barcelona.
Mm.
He knew that I was playing Sonarfest. So he's just like, bro, like catch a flight to England.
Yeah.
Let's sit in studio. And at that time, like his studio wasn't really built in a space that was his studio currently. So it was like an office with like everyone's like a proper office. Like when you had like Alturans or something, like everyone's sitting in their cubicle and like he had like his cubicle, but it was like a studio.
Oh, wow.
And we had to be in headphones and like, I was on the plane and I was like programming beats and I That's how we came up with Overshadowed. I gave him the beats.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. This is the song I'm thinking about. Let's work on it. And then I think in about 2 days, we rocked out Overshadowed. And then we kind of figured out, we're like, actually, we have something here. There's like a weird synergy thing happening here. And then from there, yeah, we just wrote The Gift, The Curse. We wrote Big Bad Crazy, which is obviously one of my favorite projects that I've ever been involved in. It's such a special album.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's how it started, and it's just evolved. In the beginning, I was very, I was almost like nervous.
That was my next question, because earlier on you spoke about imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
When you're dealing with someone like Ad Jazz, who's been making hits for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
He's a household name, you know, in deep house circles. He's a legend in England.
Yeah.
And here's the South African kid with like a heart full of passion and love and maybe, you know, a little bit of oil from fish and chips from childhood. How do you, what conversations do you have with yourself to remind yourself that you're in that room because you deserve to be in that room?
Well, I think now as I've grown up, like, yo, man, I have a level of quiet confidence that no one could ever understand. Like, I believe in myself. And even though, like, I would say, like, I suffered from imposter syndrome when I was a kid and things like that.
Yeah.
I think I it's like something that Nazi says, right? He's like, trust your dopeness. I think that always stuck with me because I do trust my dopeness 100%.
Yeah.
But when you start meeting people, and this is the weirdest thing, like, you meet people like at Jazz. Mm. And then you have this reservation of like, okay, cool. Like, but am I in the right room? Am I doing the right thing? Am I saying the right thing? Am I playing the right chord? Is that out of key? Is that, you know? And he like, it can go two ways. Either he can be like, actually, you're not on the level, whatever. But like when someone is able to see something in you, say, guide you, let me guide you this way. So in the beginning, I was very like nervous to like say what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And if you listen to The Gift, The Curse versus Big Bad Crazy,
Big
Bad Crazy, we probably butt heads the most because I was ready to.
You found your voice.
I found my voice and I was ready to challenge my mentor.
Yeah.
I was ready to challenge him. And I think a lot of times when you have, it's like Mr. Miyagi and Daniel-san.
Yes, sir.
Like Daniel-san would never challenge Mr. Miyagi, like, you know, but when he challenged him, then there's certain things that Mr. Miyagi and Daniel-san figured out together.
Yes.
So I think that's kind of like our story. It's like I challenged him. He figured things out. I figured things out. But it was just that nervous part in the beginning, trying to say, can I say this? Is this right? Because this is Ad Jazz.
Sure.
Now, it's the same with anyone, you know, like, can I really say this to Chris? Can I say this to, you know, Chris?
I was going to say, do you find that when you realize a certain muscle?
Yeah.
So, for instance, finding your voice is a muscle. The ability to say no, which a lot of people don't have, is a muscle.
Yeah.
Do you find that the minute you find that muscle, you start exercising it more because now you found your voice?
For sure.
And the fact that you could say to Ad Jazz, I don't like that progression. Let's try this instead. That you can now find your voice with other things and other people.
For sure, bro. I think that's granted. That's going to happen. But the problem is when you overwork that muscle.
Yes.
And when you think you're right the whole time.
Ah, yes.
And you start blocking people out. You're not listening to the voices that are coming to you to saying, listen, slow down, chill out. That's like on a beyond music point.
Ah, yes.
But like I think it's a balance of working that muscle, but also analyzing it and understanding, okay, cool, like am I going too far now? Like am I in a place where I'm only seeing what I want to see? Like where I think what I only want to think. Like I'm not like opening my mind. So I suppose that's where like spirituality ties in as well, you know.
Yes.
It's figuring that out. But yeah, I think like my muscles pretty like fit. Like I think like I know when I need to talk. I know how to deal with things. I'm still learning. Yeah. I'm still learning a lot, you know. Like I said, I'm nowhere close to where I should be. You know?
Sure. We have another message for you.
It's this one, I don't know who it's going to be.
What's happening, Fresh? Things to say about Julian Gomes. He's been such a big part of my life.
Yeah.
Ever since I signed Love Song 28 at Soul Candy Records, it's been a journey. Statue Sounds wouldn't be around if it wasn't for Julian. And if there's anyone that I know in this world that stays true to what they believe in the music that they love, it's Julian. Much love.
That was Kid Funk.
Yeah, that's Kid Funk. Also, very big part of my story.
Absolutely.
Journey, yeah. Also, dope DJ, really cool person, really good heart, you know.
When they signed Love Song 28 at House Africa, who submitted it for you?
How did that happen? So firstly, it got released on Marketing Music, which was a label in London.
Yeah.
And they reached out to me after the Academy because they had heard it at the Academy. So what happened is at the Academy, there's this part where everyone stands up.
Yeah.
And everyone starts playing demos that they've worked on throughout the Academy. So Benji B was there. Benji B like played Love Song 28 and everyone's like, wow, like what is that?
You know, yeah.
Like, and then like people kept talking about it. Even the Academy was done and like I started getting like messages and emails from people saying, hey, it was released on a Rebel CD. Can we like listen to it? And then they released it. And I actually didn't want to release Love Song 28 because at that time, like it was too soft.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, wanted to like play like the,
you know,
like,
bang it a bit.
So yeah. Love Song 28 was too soft. And I was like, this is not for me.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, we just released it. Soul Candy hit it, signed it and, released it, and the rest is like they say, like just happened, hits history, you know.
Kid Funk talks about how Stay True Sounds, for instance, wouldn't have happened without the likes of yourself.
Yeah.
How do you feel hearing statements such as that?
I feel like I fulfilled my purpose within that space and time.
Yeah.
Because I think, and we spoke about this, I think a lot of people thought there was a huge fallout between me and Alan because I left Stay True Sounds.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
But I think a lot of people don't understand that, like, it's beyond, like, because people are always trying to create stories to, like, you know.
People love beef and drama.
Yeah, beef and drama. Yeah. So it was more like, yes, like, at that time, Soul Candy was closing.
Mm.
There was a lot happening in the music industry. Musica was closing left, right, and center. Record stores were closing left, right, and center.
Mm.
Labels had overcapitalized on certain artists. Things were happening. Things were shutting down, and that's what happened. But in that moment, you know, I spoke to Alan. I was like, listen, if you ever want to do something, let's start our own label. He called me one day. He was like, listen, I'm going to take your offer up. Can we like talk? And then I linked up with him. We spoke. We're like, cool, let's do this thing. And then that's how Stay True Sounds was born. And how I left Stay True Sounds, because I'm sure people want to know, is I just felt like there was just too much going on, bro. Like I was too busy. And knowing that I couldn't commit, and I felt like it would be a selfish thing to like keep it as like a side hustle.
Yeah.
Because I knew the potential it had. But I spoke to Alan. I said, listen, bro, do your thing. I'm going to do my thing. You do your thing.
How did the actual conversation go? And was it a difficult one for you?
Yeah, it was difficult. I mean, I think I only feel comfortable when there's music playing or when I'm behind some sort of musical gear. Like even situations like this, I'm trying to balance out, but like having a conversation like around that space was difficult, but I mean we managed, you know. Like I think we stuck to what the intention was, which was the music. You know, the music was always the priority. So for me it was just being honest. For him it was a bit about being honest. And then it was a thing of mutual respect.
So,
you know, and like letting it play out. And till this day, we support each other. We help each other with things. Like, you have questions, I have questions.
Sure.
And I think that's the sad thing. People feel like there needs to be a fallout. You like, when things don't work out in music, like, it feels like, oh, there has to, that stigma has to stay on that situation. That shadow has to, like, overshadow us. Like, it doesn't have to be that way. Just talk it out, work it out, keep it moving.
And, you know, there are a lot of things we could choose to be adult about.
Yeah.
When it comes to deciding that maybe we're not on the same page anymore.
Yeah.
Maybe our marriage is not working anymore. For sure. Maybe the relationship, maybe you being my boss is not working anymore.
Yeah.
We can choose the direction it takes, but I think more often than not, we want to be children about it.
Yeah.
And throw a tantrum or point fingers or, you know, look for whose fault it is versus we're here now.
For sure.
How do we move forward in such a way that we both have peace?
Yeah, I think that's a big thing. I think as human beings, we're always searching for whose fault it is.
Yeah.
And who do I need to like go against.
And often we do that without a mirror in hand because sometimes the answer is right there.
It's right there, you know. So, yeah, absolutely agree with that. Like in the music industry, in life in general.
Yeah.
Even like just at a stop street, at a robot in four ways. You don't want to do that, get into an argument with someone there. You know, like it's just road rage also like gets to me. I'm just like, I don't get it, you know, like. It's not that deep. Just keep driving your
car. Choose peace.
Yeah, basically.
One last message for you. We are running out of time.
For sure.
I got so many fond memories growing up with my little bro, Julian. I think one of my favorite ones to tell is obviously back in the days, I think he was around 14, 15. He would always want to come gig with me, and I would smuggle him out of the house and into venues. And he got to meet Chris and Vinny for the first time at Carnalita. There was quite a big show there. And it was a big deal for him meeting these legends in the game, with him being an aspiring DJ. And, you know, it was somewhat of a highlight. And some days or weeks passed, and, you know, we were at another show. And at this point, he's still very young, and I'm smuggling him to venues. And I see he's holding a cigar in one hand and what looked like Coca-Cola in the other hand. And like grabbing the cigar from him, and I grabbed the Coca-Cola and I tasted it. It's Jack Daniels and Coke. And I'm like, what are you doing? You know, you're already out here and you're young, and I'm already taking chances with you being here, and mom and dad are going to show us flames. And he's just like, yeah, Chris smokes cigars and he has Jack and Coke. And yeah, it's quite a funny story for me. And just beyond that, I'm, you know, so proud of his passion and his work ethic, and how he's really given everything to get where he is today, and how he's grown, you know. So yeah, little bro, proud of you. And there's so many more stories to tell, but I think this is still one of my favorite ones, given the fear and excitement in your face at that time, you know, from just wanting to be part of the music scene, you know. So yeah, all the best. Keep growing, keep shining.
It's a cool message. Yeah,
yeah, big bro.
Yeah, that's obviously, like we spoke, you know, my brother was a big part. I'm always your big brother, you know. Anyone that has a big brother knows how important it is to have a big brother.
Yes,
you know, sir. And how they'll put you in they'll put you in line, but they'll also like you know, like they'll also like help you when you need help. And so I think, yeah, my brother like used to, like you said, smuggle me into clubs. He's not lying about the Jack and the cigar. You know,
yeah, Jack Daniels was huge at the time.
Yeah, definitely. But beyond that, I think if my parents watch this, this is gonna kind of change. Because I don't think they still, because I'm very good at hiding things. So like, I don't know if they obviously know this now, but I think they knew. But yeah, I mean, you know what? I just wanted to be in that space, you know, for me to be in the DJ box, listening to Vinny, Chris, yourself, Glenn, Tim White, anyone. Like, it was just like a really big thing for me. And I'd go back to school, and most of my friends were basically on the weekends playing video games, or like chilling with their friends doing things. And I was like in nightclubs.
Sure.
And they couldn't understand, but I grew up in a space. Like, I saw a lot of things and did a lot of things before most people my age did them. So by the time like I hit my 20s, I've already done everything. Like, what's more to do? And I think that's a big part of why I don't really drink. I don't really smoke. I don't I've already done all of that, you know? So it's like, I just grew up very quick,
sure,
because I was in nightclubs. But for me, I was there for the music.
Sure,
the music was a thing. And then yes, there were like crazy things that were happening in these clubs, and as a child, you didn't understand it. You're like, but I've never seen this. Why is this happening?
Sure,
you know. So that, obviously, I grew up in that space. That's the childhood that I had. You know, most people playing video games. I was in a nightclub.
Sure,
yeah.
You've pretty much maintained a signature sound.
For sure.
In your music. How important is that, and what would it take for you to veer from your signature sound?
I think I can't explain it. Signature sounds basically like a personality.
Yeah.
Like, your personality is your personality, mine is mine, my soul is yours. I mean, my soul is mine and your soul is yours. It's like, I think like my sound has evolved, and I think people can tell that it's organic and it's real. Yeah. Like, it's, if you listen to my very first record to what I'm making now with the latest album with Bruno and the Birds, you can sense that, okay, cool, Jules is growing, he's trying different things, he's losing people along the way, he's gaining new people. But I think, like, nothing's going to change. It's a hard question to answer, because at the end of the day, like, I'm just living in the space that I'm living. I'm just doing what I feel.
In fact, that was my next question. So what's been the cost of either staying true to your sound, a pun unavoidable, or changing your sound? Because both have consequences.
Yeah.
Whether it's you don't get booked because that is your sound.
Yeah.
Or you get booked because you changed your sound.
I think it's a tricky one, right? Because if you change your sound, then obviously like you lose your base to some degree.
Yeah.
People start having the debates on whether you're the right artist for them. But if you do change your sound, I mean, if you don't change your sound, then you don't grow.
Mm.
And then you just stay in that space. So for me, my biggest thing was not to be boxed in. And I'm never going to be boxed in. And I'm going to do what I feel, how I feel, when I feel in this journey in life. You know, and for me, that's musically, that's just where I'm at. It doesn't matter if I become the greatest, biggest DJ superstar guy that like that you look up to, or I become just another guy that's on the side there that you so that's the guy that made this song and that song.
Mm.
To me it doesn't matter. I'm just living within every like space that I'm living in. Like it's just this is what I am. It's either you take it or you don't, you know?
Does the future scare you? Let me tell you what I mean by does the future scare you. Because our industry is evolving all the time, like right now, Amapiano is huge.
Yeah,
there are new DJs on the scene. There's more options now, but there's less money going around.
For sure,
less venues means less DJs get gigs.
Yeah,
what's your level of fear and uncertainty in this ever-evolving industry that we're in?
I mean, like, we've been through so many evolutions, right? Mm. How many trends have we been through? How many trends have I been through? Probably you more than me, right? So for me, it's just another wave.
Yeah.
And you got to choose how you ride it. You know, like, how are you going to ride this wave? Because the wave's there to ride, right? So I think the music industry is, like, the way the modern music industry is in the current moment is quite unstable, and I do see it falling through if something doesn't change, because I think it's important to understand that artists need to be able to feed their families with their music, you know, and creatives need to do it, and that all ties into the bigger ecosystem, like of like the sound guys and the light guys and the bar staff and the promoters and everyone and the designers. So I think it's important that community is everything, and I think that's the way forward. I think building an organic community.
Build your people, build your tribe.
But building, and I think that's what I have, and that's what we're trying to build with World Without End, right? Mm-hmm. Is we're building our community. Not trying to be the biggest event, not a hype event. We're not anything. Like we're just building our community. Mm-hmm. And our purpose is to give you the best experiences possible within house music. Like this is why we love this music, is because it brings us together.
Is it not beautiful though, looking at the communities that people are building, you know, whether it's a Kunye.
It's amazing.
You are World Without End.
Yeah.
The Descendants have their own followers. The other day I played at, is it Groover's Prayer? And I remember the kids that do Groover's Prayer asking me for advice 10 years ago.
Yeah.
When they were starting to build this thing. And they asked me, what do you think we need to do to make this thing pop? And I told them one thing, and they reminded me when I played there a couple of months ago. I told them, be consistent with everything that you do.
Yeah.
Because eventually something will happen.
Exactly.
And they say that that's the one thing they try and do with every event. Mm. Where can we be consistent because it works?
Mm.
And where we need to change shit, what are we changing?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think fundamentally, like, there's enough space for everyone.
Yeah.
And I think the guys that don't last are the guys that sit in the corners of the room and complain. You know, like that's, you got to make a decision. Mm. Are you going to be the guy in the corner with arms folded saying, I have this on vinyl?
Yeah.
Or are you going to be that person that says, no, listen, bro, there's enough space. Let's all work together. Like nothing but love and respect for Kabza, Maparisa, nothing but love and respect for Shimza, for Coffee, for Vinny, for any any person, FKMA, everyone's cool, bro. Like, let's just all do our thing. Let's all like understand the bigger thing that we're building here, regardless of like what sound you have.
Sure.
Like, we're all doing things for our community.
Sure.
We're all building our community. So instead of breaking each other down and having musical wars, why don't we just build each other up? Mm. And if yes, people like Mapiano, then they go listen to Mapiano.
Mm.
If they like house, they listen to house. If you like Afrotech, go listen to Afrotech. It's cool. But I find it really strange when people just try and break each other down. It's toxic. It's not necessary.
So I suppose then, as a deep house DJ producer, you've been dragged into the Amapiano debate.
Right. If people see a picture of me and Kabza the Small, they're like, yeah, no. Some people are like, yeah, that's dumb. The guys, yeah. I mean, some are like, yeah, you're going to make my piano now, Hedju. Yeah. You're going to make it. I'm just like, guys.
And does it matter if I do?
And the thing is, like, I think people that know me know me. Like, yeah. I'm very versatile.
Sure.
But like, I have my sound. So even asking me that question is not to say that like my piano is not me, but it's like, I don't make my piano now.
Exactly.
It's not something like, you can't say, is Michael Jackson going to make heavy metal like Metallica? It's just these things don't
add up. It's not his sound.
It's not his sound.
But it's not to say he won't listen to it.
But it's not to say that he won't go support it and listen to it. And like, because it's music at the end of the day. So sure. I think, yeah, man, I think people have their opinions and that's cool. But I don't want to be boxed in. People know my sound. I have nothing to prove. Honestly speaking, I have nothing to prove to any like person in like the deep house space or the house space. But I don't like to be boxed in. I don't like to be called a deep house DJ. I don't like to be called a DJ sometimes, because I feel like to be a DJ these days, you know, there's a lot of like negative, you know, attention coming to DJs. Like, is it really like a thing? You're just pressing buttons. Like, what's going on? So I just want to be known as Julian. Like, that's it. Like, it's cool. Like, I play music. This is my medium. This is my sound. This is what I do.
But it could change if I wanted it to change.
Exactly. You know? So I think that's where my head's at with it. I'm not trying to, like, box myself in, you know, because I want to try and do this as long as I can and and affect as many lives as I can.
Sure.
You know, and touch as many people as I can with my music. So I'm not yet trying to, like, box myself in.
Sure.
Yeah.
Often you hear people talk about my team this, my team that.
Yeah.
What kind of arsenal do you think a DJ or a performer ought to have? For instance, some people just have a manager. Other people have a publicist and a manager and a social media guy and a makeup artist.
Yeah.
Like, how heavy are you rolling team-wise?
Right. I say team, and every time I say team, I tell you, it's like, what team? Like, it's not team.
I'm the team.
Like, there's no team. It's literally just you and me, and like, no, your booking agent, etc., etc. So, I think it's important to have a booking agent, and have a really good booking agent. I think it's important to have someone that can run events if you are doing events.
Oh, yes.
I think it's important to, if you are releasing a lot of music, have a label admin. But I think it's about, again, it's like having different people working together doing cool things, like your team here or like my team. But I don't really have a big team. I think it's like, you know, a booking agent, and then Tony runs events, and you know, that's about it. So that's about it. Like, I don't have stylists. Like, I dressed myself this morning. I hope I look cool. If I don't, like, this is my style. This is what I dig.
Does Tandy ever say, not that today, baby?
Nah, but like, I have a cool sense of style, I think. But I think, like,
does he? or you keep thumbs up, peace?
Thumbs up. Yo, we're going to be in the car driving him. Trust issues, all these things going on.
I remember when Oskido did his event end of last year, November.
Yeah.
And we were just reflecting on his journey with that event.
Yeah.
And he spoke about how in the old days, we used to do our own events.
Yeah.
But we did everything ourselves.
Yeah.
We would hire the sound. We would do this. We would make sure we have a guy. And he was saying that this is the first time he's relinquished everything to experts in that field.
For sure.
So the people who are doing the event are eventing people.
Yeah.
The sound people are sound people. It's not us now, you're a one-man team. And I think the more we realize that collaborating at that level raises the bar in the game for everyone.
For sure.
The better.
No, exactly. And I think it's important because you can't do everything yourself.
Yeah.
No matter how strong you think you are, how like many connections you have, how big your brand is, you can't build what you build by yourself. Like, for example, like Coffee needs someone like who he has in the background working, you know, and activating those spaces. Shims as well. Like, at some point, if you want to reach that level, like, you need a team, you need a strategy.
In fact, a lot of DJs nowadays even have a curator.
Exactly.
Who says, these are the top 10 songs this week you ought to play.
For sure.
Because you are so chasing your tail half the time.
Yeah.
You don't have time to fully appreciate what what else might be out there.
Exactly.
And if you have an extra ear listening out for you, then good for you.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of guys have it. And it comes back from like when we used to go to record stores and dig.
Yes.
It's time.
You need someone to create dig for you.
Exactly. So you need someone to create dig for you. But also beyond that, like person, like that's that I don't have all of these things in place. So I'm still amazed at how I'm able to like play some of the biggest shows in the world and clubs in the world. That's like, cause like I don't have an international agent.
Mm.
I'm not lying. I don't have an international agent. I don't have a PR team. I don't have a manager.
Mm.
And I feel like I don't know how I've gotten this far with just the music, because it's almost like you need those things in place. But I'm understanding how important those things are to reach the next level.
I think you need those things in place, but also don't downplay how much you're able to do yourself anyway.
For sure.
And how often, if your reputation precedes you, the bookings are going to come in anyway.
For sure.
If your music speaks for you, the bookings are going to come in anyway.
Exactly. And I think a lot of guys are like, I need a manager. Don't need a manager. You just need to tap into yourself and tell your story, man. Like at some point, like people are going to get it. They're going to understand where you come from. So it's not a thing of, I need a manager. Yes, I know. Like I would love a manager. If there's anyone that wants to manage me and wants to take me to the next level, please reach out. I'm game.
Sure.
But like, I never let that be the thing that was blocking me, because I don't care if I have a manager. I don't care if radio plays my music. I don't care if I'm on TV or if I'm on anywhere. Like for me, it's about the music and everything I put into it. I know it's going to break the door down. It's not going to knock it. It's going to break it.
Sure.
And that's what I believe. Like it starts with the music, and from the music, it just grows. It's always been about the music.
Mm.
So trying to make it about anything else is just an injustice to what we're doing. It's always going to be about the music. And now we build. From here, we build. The managers, the strategy, the brand, the events. Now we start building. Now we start building our universe, our community.
Mm.
But it started with the music, and it started with intention.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
So you are expected to put together an album that we're going to submit to the Deep House Grammys.
Okay.
Who are the five people you're working with on that album?
With the Deep House.
This is for
specifically Deep House.
Or just the House Music Grammys. Let's leave it at House Music.
South African or
it's a team of five. It doesn't matter.
So let's take it like this, right? Let's start at the base. So I'd say Frankie Knuckles has to be there. I'd say Larry Heard has to be there.
Jeez, bro, you're taking no prisoners.
I say Frankie Knuckles, and I'm saying like this is in my dreams, right?
Yes, yes.
You know, so like this is Frankie Knuckles, Larry Heard, locally. I would say Coffee and Revolution, because like Revolution, you know, like that was a big sound. And I think like people don't realize how important that frame of sound was for South Africa and where we are now.
That transition.
Yeah, Baba Venda, Dipala, all of those songs. Like it's so important for where we are right now in Afrotech and Afro music and Afro house music. I mean, so I'd say like, yes, so Frankie Knuckles, Larry Heard, let's say Coffee, for South Africa and building that. The last two, I'd say definitely At Jazz, just because for me, he's a genius. And I know his capabilities, and I've heard things that no one's heard that he hasn't released. And I'm like, wow, like even he hasn't released this, but I understand he's genius. And I'd say, I don't know, like five is quite a limitation, but I would say like maybe someone like Louis Vega, but that's just based on my upbringing.
Yes, sir.
In how much Louis Vega music I consumed and masters at work. So yeah, that's my top five that I would definitely put up like a team together, you know. So there's a lot more. And if I didn't mention names there, but yeah, like
it's not personal.
It's not personal, but definitely a lot more.
You started getting a lot of attention at the age of 19.
For sure.
What do you say to a 19-year-old with same fire in the heart and the belly who are trying to get into an industry that is now very fast paced? The scene is not the same. People are not getting gigs like they used to get gigs. If it's not a TikTok hit, is it a hit? often your online marketing is dependent on an algorithm, unless you're willing to pay a ton of money.
Yeah.
What do you say to that 19-year-old about how to navigate this mess?
Know your purpose.
Mm.
Understand why you do what you do. And pour as much love and effort into it because it's your story to tell.
Mm.
And don't let anyone ever convince you that it's not your story to tell.
Mm.
And be persistent, consistent, and tell your story because the world deserves to know your story.
Yes, sir.
And that's why I would say to someone navigating all the spaces. And beyond that, I could give you so much more advice, but that's the core principles of what I live on.
Mm.
Is there's so much more research we can do online and stuff, but I would say that's the core principles. Like, just be an artist, be a creative, live your life, trust the process, enjoy your journey. Be careful of how the world might try and rob you of your mind and your spirituality and how you see yourself and how you see music. Be careful of all of these different things and. These things really don't matter at the end of it. Like all that matters is the music and how it connects to you. But understand how complex it is. And yes, you do need strategy and you need brand and you need, it's an industry. So it's hard to put it into one paragraph, but keep the core bases, build, learn and build a team and keep growing.
Is the art of DJing dead?
Yo, that's a hard question. That's a very hard question. I'd say, to those that think it's dead, let it be.
Mm.
And to those that believe in it, keep it going.
Yeah.
Because I feel like trying to leave a statement on what could be perceived as the state of where we are is only relevant to the people that would see it that way, right?
Absolutely.
So I say like DJing is the most incredible thing and it's an art form and treat it with respect and put your heart and soul into it.
A lot of DJs are very performative, you know, whether it's a Shimza, Chaotic, Lebs of the Villain, Black Coffee to a minor extent. Yeah. How do you decide how much to perform, how much effects to use when you're DJing? Also because it's not for everyone.
Yeah.
And I even hear it on radio mixes where like, why are there effects on my radio?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because some people don't know how to even minimize it on radio. The fact that you're doing it on radio already is a problem. But if you're going to do it right.
Well, I think that's the thing, man. I think as soon as the effects button was created, like it's also influence.
Mm.
You know, it's a style of DJing that by using effects, like you obviously using that effect with intention, right?
Mm.
And the point of the effects is to obviously change the scope of music and change like things and how you activate certain parts of the room and the sound system. But I think it's been used now as like almost like, you know, like a point of performance, like you like you mentioned. But I think everyone has their style. You know, if you want to do effects and that's your thing, do it. But I mean, at the end of the day, we all have our thing. We all have our style.
Mm.
Performative dancing and stuff, it's a tricky one, right? Because I feel like people just want to be entertained.
I want to come to your gig at High with Black Coffee and see if you want to dance for the crowd.
Are you going to pull up? I'll only dance if you dance, bro. That's my rule.
No. I was telling Tandi that I'm very tempted to come and join you guys in Spain in August, right?
For sure. I think, somewhere around there.
Because I'm playing 12th July.
Yes.
And I want to go for one more trip. And I'm thinking of coming for yours.
Yeah,
so.
For sure. Please do, bro.
Only if you dance on stage, though.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, that's the thing. I think, like, I have a weird dance, bro. I think it's not going to work out. I can just move my body a bit. But, I don't know. Like, I do have a style. I suppose people see my style of DJing and they're like, okay, that's Julian. But I'll try my best to dance. If you do come. If you don't, I'm just...
Perfect.
I'm just stagnant.
Stick to what you know.
Exactly. But no, I do move, but like I'm not like a overperformative DJ. Sir. Yeah.
My dude, we are out of time.
For sure.
We're being shouted at still.
Isn't.
My guy, you are here because I love and respect your hustle, your talent, the way you move, the way you do shit, and your talent. And one of the reasons I'm interviewing a lot of DJs and producers is because I don't think we make enough noise about the people that are actually making shit happen quietly in their spaces or in their own lanes.
For sure.
So as long as I have air in my lungs, I'll continue dragging you guys in here.
Thank you.
Although I know a lot of you don't like interviews, but...
Yeah, I know. We struggle with it. But I appreciate you, man. Like, thanks again. Like, I'll say it like on the podcast. Thanks for raising me.
Mm.
Thanks for...
You're welcome, son.
Yeah.
your younger brother's here somewhere. Oh, yeah. There's your younger brother doing behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But basically, yeah, thanks for raising me through radio. You know, it was a very big part of my musical journey.
Mm.
And I don't know, you probably meet thousands of people that tell you the same thing, right? But your voice, your presence... and everything you've committed to is valued and appreciated. And we never take it for granted. So thank you so much. And we're just really grateful for everything that you are and everything you've done.
Thank you, my dude. Ladies and gentlemen. Oh, yes. Before you leave.
Oh, yeah. Snap, bro.
Yes. Before you leave. You brought a vinyl here. What is that?
This is my album. Bruno and the Birds.
Oh, wow.
And I wanted to gift it to you.
Oh, thank you.
And just thank you for everything.
Why have you printed vinyl copies?
Because I feel like the music has to live.
Yes.
It has to live in a real world. You know, like it needs to be physical. It needs to be tangible.
Yes, sir.
People need to be able to feel it and take it out like you are now.
Yeah.
And put it on a medium to play.
This is dope, man. Bruno and the Birds.
For sure.
Tell us about the hair.
That's actually Bruno, bro. Like, that's the character. That's the alter ego.
Yeah. Is Bruno like your Sasha Fierce?
It's basically like an alter ego, yeah. It's basically the other voice in my head with this specific album.
Yeah.
But yeah, most of my albums have storylines to it. So the storyline is quite simple. It's just Bruno navigating life's journeys, you know?
Yes, sir.
And all the tribulations.
Who must get this?
Anyone that wants to understand... my journey till this point.
Yeah.
But also anyone that wants to listen to house music in a very different way, like,
yes, sir.
Which is more of a storytelling way.
Yeah.
It's not really about what's the hottest track on you and which one can I play in my sets.
Yes, sir.
It's a full-on artist album.
Mm.
And that's my direction now, is to become a fully-fledged artist instead of just another DJ that releases tracks. You know,
this is dope, man. Shout out to you.
Thank you, bro. I appreciate you, bro.
Does Tandy ever say, baby, please bring Bruno home today?
Nah, bro. I don't know. I think she's cool with Bruno or Julian, but yeah. Like, it's chill.
My dude, I love you, respect you,
and love.
Thank you for the talent. Thank you for healing as many people as you've done in your career, and please continue doing what you do, bro.
Thank you, brother. Much love. I appreciate you, and thanks for having me.
Ladies and gentlemen, Julian Gomez is about to leave the building. Please stream his music, buy his music, and attend the gigs, most importantly. When's your next event that you guys are doing?
7th of June, Katie's Palace, Day by Night.
Okay.
Cramerville, and then then Club Night on the 5th of July at and Club Newtown.
Yeah.
So yeah, we do Club Night, we do Day by Night. Club Night, it's pure clubbing, stickers over the phones.
Yeah.
No flashlights. We just in the moment in the club, enjoy the music. It's about the music. Day by Night.
I think I want to attend that.
Yeah, for sure. Because then people won't ask you for photos.
No cell phones, nothing.
Yeah.
I'll be in heaven there.
Exactly, right? Yeah. No one's going to ask you for photos.
Exactly.
But then, yeah, Day by Night, more social, chill, sundowners, sunsetting, nice vibes. And yeah, it's all about the music.
Mm.
It's all about good people, no bad vibes, and bringing people together from all walks of life, regardless of race, religion, creed.
Yeah.
It's about bringing people together.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Shout out to you, bro.
Thank you, brother.
Thank you for tuning in, coming to you from AMP Studios, downtown Johannesburg. AMP Studios is home to over 80 African podcasts. Maybe yours could be next. We're part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works for all of the cinematography, YBF for all of the behind the scenes, Lati for additional production, and Keletso Modisa-Keng is our executive producer. But most importantly, shout out to you for tuning in, for sharing, for liking, and subscribing. Till next week, have a great week, in spite of yourselves.